Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick, the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature guests and talk about issues from all walks of life, from taxes to health to economics, personal finance, sales and marketing, employment, and many more. Please listen to our past episodes with Fernando Coats and Kenneth Castor. This episode is brought to you by Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja and Tri-State Tax Resolution. Do you owe the IRS money or have not filed a tax return for more than 2 years? Guess what? The IRS is looking for you. They want to throw you a party, and this party is not to celebrate your birthday, anniversary, engagement, or wedding. This party is being made to levy your wages up to 90%, take your Social Security check up to 85%, seize your bank account and other assets that you own, and revoke your passport. To stop this party in its tracks, you need to call the Tax Resolution Ninja hotline. That's 718-841-7317. The Tax Resolution Ninja runs a tax emergency room that helps people and businesses permanently resolve their tax problems. The Tax Resolution Ninja will do the heavy lifting for you, and you will never have to speak to an IRS agent. If you owe the IRS money or have unfiled tax returns, give Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja, a call. I will resolve your tax problem permanently, and you will not have to go to any party that the IRS is throwing for you. To stop the party, call the Tax Resolution Ninja at 718-841-7317. I have as my guest today for the second time, Nancy Schick. Nancy is an employment attorney, an ethno-religious mediator, conflict resolution coach, diversity trainer, and an author. Nancy is the Chief Resolution Officer of Third Ear Conflict Resolution. Nancy, thanks for coming back. It's a pleasure to have you back.
It's always nice to be with you, Alan.
There seems to be problems with how you classify worker people who work for you, whether you classify them as a W-2 employee or a 1099
contractor.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it's okay, because you know, and I think you and I both know this, that the terms get misused a lot, and you'll hear people say things like 1099 employee. No, not a 1099 employee. There is no such thing.
Explain what the difference.
So as I try to make it as simple as possible for people. A W-2 employee, I think most of us know what that is, because at some point most of us have had a job, and you know, whether you worked at a fast food restaurant or in retail while you were in school, and you got a W-2 and then you filed your taxes at the end of the year, right? We know that that's when you're getting wages. You're often in those, you're getting paid hourly. And then, you know, maybe you do move into a salaried position, but you're working for someone else and you're doing their business. And you're doing often a role where you couldn't necessarily do it on your own, right? It might be similar in function, but then in contrast to that would be the 1099 contractor. And that's an independent contractor. You see other terms thrown around, that it would be freelancer, permalancer, someone in the gig economy, right? All of those fancy terms. Really what we're talking about is someone who's getting a 1099 MIS form at the end of the year, reporting their earnings. That means no taxes have been taken out. You know this, right? No taxes have been taken out. That person is supposed to be paying their own taxes. The way that most administrative agencies look at these 1099 contractors is they're independent business owners with a contract, right? You think about it, independent contractor, independent business. Contract means contract, or, right, you have a contract. And that means that you're usually providing a service that's not crucial to the original business. It's more of an ancillary function. So for example, you as a CPA would be ancillary to my business as an attorney and coach and trainer, right? I don't need you in my business to produce products and services that I produce, right? You're not going to go in my cost of goods sold.
Okay.
Right. But if you're looking at who is needed to produce what you sell for your own income, they are probably employees.
So, I mean, So someone who actually provides a service that directly related to the business?
Yes.
Would be considered an employee.
Yes.
But there are certain rules that if the employee comes in, is allowed to come in whenever he wants, as long as the work gets done, what's the difference between that and someone who's, told to come in from 9 to 5?
That's a great one that a lot of people will pull from, right? Is they'll say, but I don't control when they come to work. They come when they want to. I'm not controlling their work. And sometimes they're providing their own supplies, right? Like maybe, especially right now with work from home, they might be using their own computer, their own internet service, their own cell phone, but it's still, it depends. It's the classic lawyer answer. It always depends. And so one of the other things that you need to know is that we're not just talking about the IRS guidelines here. You have to filter these classifications through the IRS guidelines, right? The IRS criteria, the state that you're in, right? You have to look at their Department of Labor, obviously the Federal Department of Labor also. Usually your state and federal are going to mirror each other. In New York, we do have some additional protections for workers. So sometimes even if you meet the Federal Department of Labor criteria, you might not meet the New York ones. Then you also have to look at things like the State Workers' Compensation Agency and their criteria, unemployment, which falls usually under the Department of Labor. But there are three major agencies you have to look at. It's the IRS, Workers' Comp, and Department of Labor. And if those criteria aren't all being considered, there's a chance you're going to misclassify, and one of those agencies is going to come looking for penalties from you.
You have this situation where, because I've seen this, where the person gets paid on a 1099, and when you do your workers' comp figures, originally they don't include these people in the workers' compensation fit numbers, the payroll numbers. Workers' comp comes in, the workers' comp comes in, and they go through this, and they say, "Where are your 1099 employees? Where are your 1099 contractors?"
Right.
And they get included. Then they get included in your number, unless they have their own workers' compensation policy.
Yeah, and that's in part one. They're going to collect the premiums because of course they have actuaries. They know what claims typically cost, and they calculate out what the risk is of a certain percentage of your payroll that's 1099 and how likely you are to have misclassified, right? They know your industry. They know how many people typically get misclassified in your industry. And usually they're going to add on a little bit more to make sure that if you have a claim, that it's covered, right? Now, actually, that, believe it or not, that's to your benefit. Because I deal a lot with employers who have no workers' comp insurance, and they're calling their entire staff independent. Those people get hit really hard, because if you have no insurance, then you're going to get penalized by the Workers' Compensation Board at a rate of $2,000 for every 10-day period. You don't have workers' comp insurance for the employees that you're supposed to be covering. Most of the people, by the time they get to me, have penalties minimum $16,000. Now, I've seen a lot worse. I've seen $500,000 in penalties accrue. So that's the first thing, is you're absolutely right. So the premiums will get adjusted. And you might not realize that you've technically misclassified them. And as long as it's a reasonable amount on your premiums, you probably just pay the premium and don't worry about it and think, okay, peace of mind, I'm fine.
Right.
It doesn't always mean that you're out of the weeds, right? And what we've seen this year in particular, because of so many people applying for pandemic assistance, we're seeing a lot more claims, a lot more penalties. So I've been very busy this year already with penalties and various resolution of these worker misclassifications. And so one of the things that happened is, under the pandemic assistance, we didn't have this before, where 1099 contractors were considered independent business owner. So as an independent business owner, you don't typically get to apply for unemployment.
Right.
But this year we said, no, we have all kinds of different things. You can possibly get unemployment. You can possibly get PPP, the Paycheck Protection
right.
Program.
Right.
You have all these government assistance programs. That's great. But just understand that if your paperwork's not in order, it's now being submitted to various government agencies who are doing audits, right? So that's
right.
what we've been seeing is that the IRS, the state tax department, the Department of Labor, the Workers' Compensation Board, those they're sharing data, right? They're sharing information. And so if your tax returns are not lining up with what you're reporting to these other agencies and to your insurance carrier, like you mentioned about the premiums, then you're probably going to get flagged and you're going to get one of the first things I see is they get an inquiry notice from the Workers' Compensation Board if they have no insurance at all. And so where I've seen that lately, like you said, it's the people that call everybody that they pay, an independent contractor, and they just haven't gotten workers' comp. And I can tell you it's a lot cheaper to just go ahead and get a base policy.
Yeah.
and pay an adjustment in their premium than to pay that $2,000 for every 10-day period. And just, you know, as a business owner, do that cost-benefit analysis.
Right, right. You know, in terms of the unemployment, I haven't seen anything on how the state is planning to collect the money back on the money that they paid the self-employed.
Right.
You know, usually they, you know, you lay off an employee, they increase your tax rate. I don't know how they're planning on recovering that money. And here we are in March and haven't seen a thing.
And that's where I suspect a lot more audits are going to be conducted, right? Because what they're going to have to look for, if they're paying out these benefits, they have to find a way to pay for them, right? As you're pointing to.
Oh, they can just print the money. I mean, you know, it's...
Arguably they can, and in some ways that's what it seems like they've done.
Yeah.
But you know, you have to also understand that these government agencies have a fiduciary duty to the citizens of the state, right? To the citizens of the country, the municipality, et cetera. So they have the discretion to audit. And so let's say they audit an employer and they say, oh, well, I actually have contracts. These are independent business owners. I have contracts for every single one of them. The state has the discretion to find that contract invalid, at least to the extent of the classification, right? And one of the things that we do in contract law, as you know, is we will take out provisions that conflict with the law without destroying the entire contract. So one of the things that the Workers' Compensation Board has the authority to do, for example, or the Department of Labor, is find that your independent contract, that the independent contractor agreement is what a lot of people call it,
right,
that
right.
it's not valid as to the classification and you still have to withhold the payroll taxes, provide them workers' compensation insurance, and you also are required for all your employees in New York to have disability and paid family leave insurance. And with the paid family leave, that's a big one right now. Because that, of course, has come into play with the pandemic. A lot of people have filed for PFL benefits so that they could take care of maybe a someone who had COVID in their family, or they had to take off because maybe they had to homeschool their children during the pandemic when the schools were closed. And there are different ways that they've qualified for different benefits. And that now puts the insurance carrier in that situation, if you're paying out PFL, right, benefits, you're going to want to make sure that you've collected enough premium, which is back to that point that you made earlier, that they'll often, when they do that payroll audit, increase your premiums and include your independent contractors, because they know those are not always independent contractors and they don't want to get stuck with an uninsured claim. And that's probably, again, in your best in your benefit. That's why I tell almost all my clients, go ahead and get a base policy. I pay for my base policy for workers' comp and disability, even when I don't have anybody on my payroll, because one, I do this for a living,
right,
and two, it's relatively inexpensive for me to carry that. And then when I do hire, if there's any gray area, I know I'm covered. And I'd rather pay the additional premium then pay a penalty.
Okay. As far as the Family Leave Act, my understanding is that the employees are actually paying for that. It's not the employer.
You have the option.
Okay.
So some employers do opt to go ahead and pay for that, but they do have an option to also have the employees have a deduction toward that. So it just depends on the employer. I have a mix of both. Actually, I probably have fewer who do take it out of their employees' paychecks.
Hmm. That's interesting. So, I mean, what do you do in a situation where you have the independent contractor that you haven't taken the money, that you haven't taken the money out, and all of a sudden, the insurer comes in and says, it should have been included.
Again, if it's the insurance carrier coming to you and asking for an adjustment of the premium, probably better than if the state agency's coming. The Workers' Compensation Board is coming and looking for something, then you've got a claim and you've got somebody misclassified, and the penalties can be quite harsh.
Yeah.
But at least you have a policy in place at that point. So
right.
Again, I personally feel like it's better to pay the premium adjustment in most cases. Now, again, everything depends, and this is not legal advice. This is general information, right? Get my disclaimer.
Right. I many years ago I had a situation, and I don't know what I was thinking at the time. We had home care for my father-in-law. Mm-hmm. Now, in the homeowner's policy, there was a provision for workers' compensation. So I just assumed that we were covered. I go to do the payroll tax, because we did this legitimately. We filed the payroll tax returns. We did the Social Security and the unemployment and stuff. Get a letter from Workers' Compensation Board. You have no. It was like some big number. And I'm saying to myself, but we had coverage. Turns out that coverage in the homeowners is not adequate.
Right.
And I didn't know it at the time. But
that's a really great thing to bring up, because I do a lot of penalty negotiations for people that have domestic workers. So it's the home health care worker that you're hiring directly, not through an agency, right? Home health care, I've had elderly companions, nannies, housekeepers, right? If they're full-time, the other thing that you have to be concerned about in those situations is also overtime, right? Because a lot of times these are people who are living in.
Right.
And it doesn't, just because you're providing them housing, that doesn't automatically bring you outside of the wage and hour law. So there's a lot of calculation that goes on in this. And I work with a colleague who handles the wage and hour part while I handle the workers' comp part, right? But that's a very common one, is people think that their homeowners or even their renter's insurance will cover more than a casual worker. So really what that workers' comp rider is it's typically covering a casual worker. So it's maybe it's somebody that comes in and paints the apartment. That's just working under their Social Security number. Hopefully they're still, paying their taxes and all of that. Right? You're not paying them in cash and that you're recording things, right? Those are all the issues that we see. And I definitely see that a lot with, I tell frequently the story of one of my favorite clients. She was 98 years old when I met her. And she was living independently. And in her apartment, here in New York, but she kept falling. So at a certain point, the hospital and the social worker and her building management said, we can't have you living alone anymore. We need somebody that can at least call for you if you fall. Because, I saw this with my own mother when she was living alone, and she would fall and she fell twice where she couldn't get to the phone, right? And that meant she was lying there for 12 hours. 8 hours, right, before somebody ended up checking on her and found her. And so they said, no, you can't go home without 24/7 companionship. She didn't need high level care.
Right.
She did what most people do.
Right.
You call and go, hey, how can I come up with somebody to just stay with her? And we want to be We want to pay them and do right by them because we acknowledge that they're working. And you think, as long as I pay them well, I've got this worker, you know, I've got this workers' comp rider to my homeowner's insurance, I'm good.
No, you're not.
If they're working 40 hours, your workers' compensation rider is, it's no longer going to cover you because it's more than casual work.
Right.
But it's written in a way that's really confusing. And I have tried, unfortunately, a number of cases where that's been the argument, and we lose. We always make the argument,
right,
but we always lose that argument.
Yeah. And so at the time, I don't know, the penalty was like something tremendous. We managed to get it knocked down to $500.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not that we were trying to avoid the, legitimately, I thought we were covered.
And here's the worst part about it. My 98-year-old client, she had somebody that she had hired, you know, she had probably like a lot of people do, they had a team of people, and one of them was being really mean to her. So she fired her. And so here's this tiny little woman, you know, all of probably like 100 pounds, and had somebody file a claim and say she was walking with my client and twisted her ankle and now could never work again, and filed a workers' comp claim. Oh, now, again, mind you, that homeowner's policy didn't cover.
Wow.
So now you've got a claim for workers' comp with no insurance. You got to pay for the underlying claim as well as the period that you didn't have insurance. That can get really expensive. Luckily for my client, you know, she's long gone, but in that particular case, it was a relatively minor injury. And the person was happy. She just wanted some money until she could get a new job. So we were able to settle that. Imagine if that had been a real injury where this person had a major back injury. Maybe they fell off a ladder or something like that, fell down the stairs and had major injuries. You're looking at possibly in the medical loan, a couple $100,000.
Yeah.
Plus
yeah.
the penalties for not having insurance.
Yeah.
So sorry to scare people, but I have to scare you sometimes to get you to take action.
Absolutely. You can literally go bankrupt.
You can. Yeah. And the Workers' Compensation Board doesn't, when you get that penalty notice, they honestly don't want to put you out of business or take your home, right? That's not their goal. But what they're required to make sure you're in compliance, because they had early in my career, we had an influx of these uninsured cases, and the state ran out of money to pay for them. You know, you think about like after 9/11, all the people that were down on the Trade Center site, it was just a flood of people. And after Hurricane Sandy or Superstorm Sandy, right? And a lot of times in these emergency situations, you get these floods of contractors coming in and, you know, just trying to staff up things quickly. A lot of times it seems easier to go the independent contractor route to staff quickly and flexibly. And that's what happens. It's not necessarily people who are willfully trying to circumvent the law, right? It does happen. There are those people out there, right? I know.
Yeah, there are. And those are the ones that they should be going after. But you know, you see the size of these penalties and you're thinking to yourself, I mean, is that really their purpose to collect the penalties, or just to make sure that you're covering your employees or yourself for that matter.
And it is to make sure you're in compliance. I personally think that one of the reasons that those penalties accumulate the way they do, and you get the notices that make you kind of want to wet your pants, right, or pass out or whatever it might be, right? It's because you and I both know psychology. How many times do you have clients that you say, you got to fix this, you got to fix this, it's a problem, it's going to become a bigger problem? We're not wired as human beings to be as proactive as we probably should. But if you get a penalty, like, so imagine that, you get a penalty inquiry notice that says, hey, do you have insurance? We think you probably should. And the board sends those. The Workers' Compensation Board sends those. They sometimes get filled out and sent back in. A lot of times they don't. So, you know, it goes in that, like, we're all busy. It goes in that I should deal with that pile, right?
It's like an IRS notice.
Exactly. It's exactly like that. And we all know that it's overwhelming. There's stuff coming at us all day, every day, paper like to here. But if you get a $16,000 penalty or up, that's something that suddenly you stop and you take care of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, again, I don't necessarily agree with that strategy. I hear the panic when clients call me, and I know that's not what we really want to do to people, but otherwise you run the risk of someone seriously injured on a job site that has no coverage. And the Workers' Compensation Board is charged with making sure employees are taken care of. So if that's what they have to do to get you to be in compliance, that's what they have to do.
And then the other side of the coin is, let's assume that the owner is covered, because a lot of times the owner's not covered by these policies. Why is it so difficult for the owner to collect on these if they get injured?
Yeah, I think unfortunately it's the history of fraud, right? I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. Is unfortunately, as a lawyer, I've seen this since day one, and you know, in my practice, is that most of the laws that are out there are for a small percentage of the people, and that small percentage of the people end up kind of ruining it for the rest of us. So the insurance carrier looks a lot more heavily at a small business owner who files against his or her own policy, right? They're going to look to see how healthy was your business, right? If your business was struggling and then suddenly you have a claim, they look at that like, is this a way you're trying to find some extra funding for your business? Now, as a business owner myself, and who works with business owners who maybe get injured and are doing the work themselves, right? Like, you know, and usually it's because suddenly, like during the pandemic, it's a perfect example. The owners are often doing a lot more of the work while their employees are laid off and collecting unemployment. Now that employer is the one that gets injured in place of the employee that would have gotten injured. It makes sense to us who function that way.
Right.
But to a large insurance company who has mostly people that come in at a certain way in a certain time, and they're more traditional workers, they don't always get how the entrepreneur works. They don't understand that we're doing everything, right? They don't understand that if the toilet clogs in the office, I have to unclog it.
Right.
That if we run out of coffee, I'm the one that usually runs right to go get it.
That's right. Yeah, it's like, you know, if I need stamps, I got to go to the post office. Somebody's got to go.
Right. Now, I actually like that because it gets me out of the office, right? So I'm like, I used to, even when I had like the full-time workers here, a lot of times like, no, I'll go. I'll do it. So it might be the only time I get out that day.
I used to work for somebody who, during lunch hour, he would actually go out and do all these errands.
So hopefully, you know, hopefully this is at least getting people to start thinking about whether they're classifying workers correctly or not. And I think there's another thing that happens is that everybody else is doing it this way. Yeah, that argument doesn't hold up in court.
No.
and I know I'm preaching to the choir, because you've probably had clients that say the same thing to you, right?
Yep. Well, the answer to that is, if everybody else was jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you do that also?
Exactly. I hear my mother saying that to me all the time.
Now I don't know if that's a mother thing or a parent thing or a cultural thing.
And I don't know what the equivalent is, but I'm sure there's some equivalent to that we'll be hearing, you know, in the future as well.
So when you're not working, what are you doing these days?
that's kind of a funny question, because I just realized, I guess we did this before the pandemic the last time. I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember if we did or not, but
no, we did it after the pandemic started, because I'm only doing the podcast since June.
Oh, okay. So wow, pandemic time frame of I don't really know. It's interesting. I'm working on a lot of different things that I'm trying to get done, but you know, while the pandemic is going on, and take advantage of the fact that I am inside. I don't have to go to court as often, right? We're doing virtual hearings. I'm not having that travel time, which plus or minus, right? Because I actually kind of liked being able to read the book on the plane and stuff like that. It was a nice downtime. So I'm finishing up the revised edition of my first book, working on my second book, which will probably be out around November. So the relaunch will be out probably in the next month. There'll be the audio version of that. And moving on with that. And then, you know, they've got courses that align with them also. So I'm doing that kind of stuff that's my, quote, free time. I look forward to using, not that bat necessarily. that's my bat from my former team, you know, team that I coached. But I am looking forward to when they open the ball fields up again and I can get out and get more exercise. I'm riding my bike, taking long walks. I've been taking a lot of photos. So you'll notice if you go to my website, that a lot of the photos on the website are photos of New York that I took, because I'm really trying to see the city in a new way and notice like the small businesses that are out there that we want to make sure survive the pandemic.
Right. Absolutely.
And not that we don't want the big ones. I'm not an anti-corporation, anti-big corporation kind of person. I think we need the full range. Right. Yeah. But I think the small business owners in particular really need the hand up right now. So I've been trying to get out there and, you know, occasionally stop and get the coffee at the local place and maybe buy a gift card for them, that kind of thing. So it all sounds work related, but we're kind of limited on what we're doing. Absolutely. These days.
You know, I haven't been out very much other than to go back and forth to my wife's office, to get her, but I don't do this. I don't go to shopping anymore. I don't do a lot of things that I was doing. So, I guess we're on the road to seeing it go back somewhat to the way it was before. I'm not so sure we're actually going to go back to that. I think things have changed permanently, to some extent.
And you can see that in the restaurants, even though our restaurants are open for indoor dining again.
Right.
You see a few people in, but it's not the same.
No, it's not.
And I'll be honest, I've seen the Southwest was running ridiculously low fares, and for a moment I was like, oh, I want to go see my family so badly.
Yeah.
But at what cost? And I'm just not ready. I'm not, I'm low on the list for vaccine, and I'm okay with that. I can work from home. I can do that. So let the other people who are in more dire situations get that vaccine first. But that still puts me in a situation where I'm looking at my life being this way for another 6 months, probably.
Well, easily. I think we're going to go another year. Actually, I think we're going to go another year.
Yeah.
Before we actually open it. Things really, really open up, but I'm getting my second shot on Friday.
Okay.
And even then, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it covers. I don't know what it covers, what it doesn't cover. I don't think anybody knows what it's gonna, cover. And maybe 6 months from now, I'll need another one.
True. And you see people, I think, getting a little bit more relaxed about masking up and socially distancing.
Yeah, not good. Not good because you still don't know yet.
Right.
There's a lot of things we don't know.
And that's me. Look, you and I we have similar personality types and we chose similar professions, right? Where we're a little risk adverse, we advise people on how to avoid risk.
Right.
And this just seems simple. We both have work we can do from home.
Absolutely.
We're lucky. We really are. And so I'm trying to be mindful of that and be grateful for that and look for ways to pivot and be of service to others. So that's another thing that I often offer the 30-minute breakthrough call for people. So, if you're stuck on something, I don't always have the answers, but I can help you find resources. And so, that's something I've been doing throughout the pandemic. It doesn't have to be law related, doesn't have to be small business related. Right. If you're just stuck, Yep. You need somebody to help unstick you, right? Then, you know, like reach out. That's been the number one thing that's gotten me through the pandemic, is forcing myself, even on the days where I didn't want to, I already have it on my calendar that I'm going to reach out to somebody, because otherwise I'll go in my little dark hole where I stay and it's kind of dark, right? And then I wonder why I'm sad.
Yeah. you can watch a Marx Brothers movie. That'll get you.
Yeah. Oh, some of the things I have watched during the pandemic, I think it just gives me the excuse to watch some of the most ridiculous things just because I need to laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right now I'm binging on, my wife and I are binging on Heartland, which is a series like 13 years in running.
Oh, so okay.
We're still like halfway through. We're in season 7, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've been watching. That was another thing we did, is I've been learning German for the past couple of years, because my boyfriend's family has, you know, some of them are in Germany, and I'm obviously schick. I've got some Germanic background. And so I've always wanted to get fluent in the language so I could communicate with his family when we're in Germany. Right. Someday when we can go again, or by Zoom. And so we've been watching Netflix in German.
Oh.
And so that's been, that definitely takes a lot longer to watch. Like a 40-minute show might take us 2 hours to watch.
Now, do either one of you speak German?
He does, and he's mostly fluent, I guess you could say. He's hard on himself and says he's not that good, but he can definitely carry on a conversation. I, at this point, could carry on a conversation with children, which is an improvement, right? I can, you know, I can buy a train ticket and I can, you know, talk to children.
Okay. That's funny.
I've improved a lot.
what the situation does for you, it's just.
Yeah, well, but you know, it's the same thing. I mean, what kinds of things are you doing to keep yourself sane during all of it?
I'm watching a lot of lighthearted movies and series. Every once in a while, I'll get into something that's a little bit more like blow 'em up. I call them blow 'em up movies.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, but
well, those can be kind of funny too.
Yeah. You know, but you know, I'm just trying to keep my the hour that during the day that I actually get out a little bit, you know, that helps.
Yeah,
that helps. Yeah. And because I'm basically a homebody. You know?
I think for those of us who are a little on the introverted side, we're kind of thriving in this.
Yeah.
But I'm a little more introverted. I like to go head down and get my work done. You know, I do have the Germanic background, and my German grandmother was definitely like task, and then you play, right? Yeah. After all the chores are done. So that my mother carried that forward to me. And so I'm okay functioning that way.
Absolutely.
But then I get to points where I'm like, I have to play.
Right.
I just need to go and be silly and laugh and do ridiculous things. You know, I walked to Brooklyn during the snowstorms because I couldn't ride my bike. I couldn't ride my bike anymore. And it was like, well, either I don't get to spend any time with my boyfriend who lives over there, we alternate weekends, or I have to find a way. So I walked to the ferry, took the ferry, right? That's relatively safe. Got off on the other side and walked for an hour to get there. But I got my steps in.
So an hour from, where does it drop you off? Where's the ferry drop you off?
North Williamsburg is where I would go. Just so from 34th Street here in Manhattan to North Williamsburg. But it, you know, there's one that goes all along the East River.
Right.
Yeah. And so you can, like, the Astoria one's easy for people that live over there. You'll see them taking the commuter back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. So you, and from North Williamsburg, you walk an hour. So how, where?
He's in Bushwick.
Bushwick. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you know what? When I thought about it, it was like, it's really not that bad. I think after the pandemic, I enjoy riding my bike over there. Right. I get my exercise. When I'm on the bike, it takes about the same, maybe 5-10 minutes difference, depending on, just conditions and crowds and things. Right. But it's only nominal difference from the subway. And I get exercise this way, and I'm not breathing what other people are breathing necessarily. Or at least I'm doing it on a very micro level.
Absolutely. Right. Right. Nancy, thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Had a blast the first time, and this was even better.
Thank you. Yeah, we actually gave them some really, timely, substantive issues that we have to deal with.
Absolutely.
We don't want anybody going out of business. We need to hold you guys in, right? Like those of you you've survived a whole lot more. So let's get you through this too.
Absolutely. I mean, just do what you need to do, and everybody will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're here to support each other. And I love that you support me, Alan. And I'm so here in your corner too.
You're like my voice of reason.
Oh, that's a heavy charge. I'll make sure I hide out in my little hole when I'm doing things I don't want you to mirror.
thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Listen to my previous episodes, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.